At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
In today's podcast, I'm talking all about how to naturally optimize your testosterone. So if you only care about supplements and you want to skip over sleep and diet and exercise and body composition, then go ahead and skip to the chapter at the end of the video and I'll say some things about Tang Ket Ali. Otherwise, go ahead and start here and I will go top to bottom, addressing the various lifestyle and natural things you can do to optimize your testosterone levels. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, Just the Basic Series. My name is James O'Hara. I'm a nurse practitioner, and today we are talking about just the basics of optimizing your natural testosterone. So, as is customary in this series, we have a graphic that we'll pull up on the screen and talk through what this means. So, here we have a biohacker who is looking into all sorts of supplements to fix his low testosterone or to optimize his testosterone. But as you can see, if you zoom into either the upper right hand or lower right hand corner, the exercise equipment has cobwebs, spider webs, clearly not being used. So the message here is that sometimes it is just about being consistent with the basics. We also have a custom to say what the average provider out there is doing. So if you have a concern about your testosterone level and you go in to see the average physician, PA, or NP, what are they going to say? And assuming that you have a normal testosterone and no underlying true pathology, but you just want to boost your testosterone, they may say, nothing. Your testosterone is normal. And that may very well be the end of the conversation. I've heard that from patients many times. It's not always the case, but I would bet that more than 50% of the time, that's going to be the general interaction that is had out there. We also have a myth and a truth. And today's myth is that microplastics are the largest cause of declining testosterone in the United States. You might believe this to be the case if you've been on social media recently. And certainly microplastics are something to think about and be concerned about. I don't think they're helping testosterone levels, but I don't think they are the single largest cause of declining testosterone in the United States. And the truth here is that I think that obesity is the largest cause of declining testosterone levels in the United States. So stay tuned, and we'll talk about how to optimize testosterone. Looking at our first slide here, this is the effect of weight loss on testosterone levels. So you can see sort of this cluster of studies all the way from, 10% body weight loss all the way up to 40% body weight loss. And it's fairly linear. So depending on how far away someone is from their optimal body fat concentration, they could potentially increase their testosterone level quite significantly. Now, I'm going to skip ahead to the corrected units, the nanogram per deciliter units that more people are familiar with. I don't know what a nanomole is, and frankly, I'm not convinced it's a real thing. So now we have a much nicer graph with the testosterone converted to nanogram per deciliter. So you can see here, if you lose 10% of your body weight, then you may improve your testosterone by about 100 nanogram per deciliter. On the far end of that, you may have up to a 350-point increase if you truly have 40% of your body weight to lose and become metabolically healthy. I've seen this play out where individuals have had low testosterone, been significantly overweight or obese, have gone on testosterone replacement therapy, improved their health, come to our practice and say, hey, I don't really want to stay on testosterone forever. I'm healthier now than I ever have been. Do you think I might be able to come off? And oftentimes they see that their recovered testosterone levels are actually better than their testosterone levels were prior to all the weight loss and lifestyle improvements. So this is something to think about. Obviously, this doesn't work for someone who's 130 pounds. If they lose 40% of their body weight, they're probably going to die. They're not going to improve their testosterone levels. So context matters, but directionally, I think body composition is probably the most significant, or can be the most significant factor for your natural testosterone. In line with that, diet. So people ask a lot of questions about diet when we're having our consults in the clinic. And, you know, what matters from a testosterone standpoint? So any diet that improves your metabolic health has the potential to improve testosterone. Probably the single macronutrient that makes the biggest impact is dietary fat. If you adhere to a very low-fat diet, you are going to pretty substantially reduce your testosterone levels. Now, there are people out there who subscribe and eat and feel good on a low-fat diet. Doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with that necessarily. If you someone is feeling well and thriving, they don't necessarily need to add fat in just for sake of optimizing their testosterone levels. But if you're watching this video, you're probably at least somewhat interested in how to optimize your testosterone levels. And it's not that more fat is always better. I don't think everyone needs to do strict keto in order to have a healthy testosterone level. But generally keeping your dietary fat somewhere between 35 to 45% of your percent of calories. So using the formula, we can probably put up a graph on the screen of this that, you know, calories from fat are 9 calories per gram of fat. If you're eating, say, 2,000 calories per day, if 900 of those are from fat, then that puts you at that 45% mark. So that's sort of 100 grams of fat per day, sort of a framework you can use and adjust based on what your total energy intake is. So the reason I say specifically fat and what we'll focus on for this podcast is because when trials have been done where people deviate from that, let's say you reduce your dietary fat significantly, then a couple of times, and this has been replicated, testosterone levels reliably decrease. So study number one, dietary fat at baseline was about 40% of calories, restricted to 25% of calories, and then increased back to 40% of calories. And you can see that testosterone levels dropped not quite 100 nanogram per deciliter, pretty close to it, and then recovered, you know, almost to baseline. And these were sort of 6-week intervals, healthy men, non-obese men. Of note, the calorie intake did drop a bit, about 500 calories during the intervention. So certainly getting enough calories is another part of that equation if you have a healthy body composition. If you have a unhealthy body composition, like say too high of a body fat percentage, then reducing calories will probably increase your testosterone level. And on the same token, on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you are underweight, you definitely want to increase calories. If you're chronically restricting calories, your body is not going to think, hey, this is an ideal time to have a super high testosterone level. It's going to go into more of a starvation state. If someone is truly starving and chronically malnourished, they will have hypogonadism secondary to that, or they certainly can. We have another study on a different group of men, also considered healthy, age 33 to 34 on average. And their total testosterone dropped from, looks like, about 390 down to about 340. And the change that led to this was a 41% increase of calories, 41% baseline intake down to about an 18% intake of dietary fat, meaning only 18% of the calories they're taking in were from dietary fats. So this is a pretty low baseline testosterone, but it shows that even in two pretty different populations that you can have a significant and reliable effect of decreasing dietary fat, decreasing testosterone. There may be some nuance here to the types of fat. So some people will argue that, you know, saturated fat is the best fat for increasing testosterone. There may be a little bit of some associative data or preclinical data to support that. But my experience, just making sure that you have a generally healthy eating pattern, you're getting the calories right, and getting the percent of your macronutrients right, it's probably going to be the most important. And then you may have a few percent of your pie chart that leads to what your total testosterone is being the types of fat you're taking in. Next, we have sleep. So sleep is another pillar of health. And I think this is overstated in the social media and health influencer space of sleep's effect on testosterone. In reality, it doesn't seem to have that large of an effect on testosterone, or at least what I would expect. So this graph shows if you are sleep restricted for a week, meaning you go from about 9 hours of sleep to less than 5 hours of sleep, you only have about a 10 to 15% decrease in testosterone, which is not a lot. And if you look at the area under the curve, total exposure, again, it's not that big of a difference. But there's a lot of other things that happen during sleep and reasons besides testosterone that you're not going to be feeling or performing as optimally or making your best progress with exercise or body composition, independent of just the testosterone. So I still do think sleep is important for optimizing testosterone levels, but in being realistic, if someone says, oh, I had a bad night of sleep before my blood test, and maybe that's why my testosterone is low, sure, maybe it was 10, 15, 20% higher when you had a good night's sleep. But again, this is also why we're going to get multiple readings before we talk about if someone really does have an issue with testosterone, we want to make sure it's a reliable pattern. If someone has one day of 300 nanogram per deciliter and another day of 900 nanogram per deciliter, then we can't just point to the one that gives us the indication of, hey, this person has low testosterone and act based off of that. You're sort of looking at averages and where someone is consistently and specifically measuring in the morning. This graph does a nice job of showing the morning levels here. That's another nanomole metric, but that's close to 700 nanogram per deciliter, where both of these groups are peaking at. And then you can see by 9, 10 p.m. at night, they're actually quite low and don't start to rise again until, you know, early morning hours during REM sleep. Next, we have exercise. So exercise is another important factor in improving testosterone levels. So with exercise, the effect sizes are not as large as you might think. And I should mention that there's going to be outliers in either case here. So some people are going to start exercising and see much larger increases in testosterone. Some people will exercise and see no increase in testosterone. But when you look at sedentary elderly men, it looks like they saw about a 10, 15% increase in testosterone, which converts out to about 50 nanogram per deciliter. Interestingly, their free testosterone didn't quite rise as much because their sex hormone binding globulin, this is a protein that sort of binds and regulates the delivery and metabolism of testosterone, also increased. So still had a little bit of an increase in free testosterone, but not quite as much. And that's a pattern you'll see in sedentary individuals who begin exercising, or say someone with diabetes who becomes much healthier and starts to, you can't technically say reverse, but improve their diabetes, lower their A1C, that person will also likely have a rise in the sex hormone binding globulin. So sort of a pattern you see associated with better metabolic health. And this was just aerobic exercise, so doing cardio, and you saw a 50 nanogram per deciliter increase. And some people will make the claim that, well, doing cardio is bad for your testosterone. And you could say that in some cases. At excess levels, I saw one paper stating if you're running more than 64 kilometers, we can put up whatever the mile conversion is for that on the screen, you're running that many miles per week, you can start to see negative impacts on the testosterone. And in what could be considered like elite or very endurance trained men, they tend to have normal testosterone levels, but lower than even those in sedentary men. So in one of these papers that we'll put a link to in the description, the testosterone levels of the endurance trained men were only about 55 to 85% of those seen in sedentary men. Unfortunately, there was no full access to this paper, so I couldn't find what the actual numbers were. So if I make up some numbers and say sedentary men had a testosterone of 700 nanogram per deciliter, then that would mean that endurance-trained men only had a testosterone of 385 to 595 nanogram per deciliter. So if you go too far towards the endurance side of things, you can see some decreases in testosterone, but the goal of endurance exercise is not really to improve the testosterone. It's typically they're trying to achieve a certain time in a certain endurance event, whether it's a marathon, an Ironman, a triathlon. There's a lot of different things people do there because they enjoy it, not necessarily because they're aiming to have a testosterone of X nanogram per deciliter. Next, we have weightlifting. People talk about strength training, resistance training, weightlifting, certain protocols of X number of squats, bench press, deadlift that are suggested to increase testosterone. I've had patients come to me with these anecdotes of, you know, they stopped doing deadlifts and they saw their testosterone come down a bit, added deadlifts back in, and they saw their testosterone production improve or increase a bit, typically in the ballpark of, you know, 100 nanogram per deciliter plus or minus. So it's not like they're going from 300 nanogram per deciliter to 900 nanogram per deciliter. But people have reported these things. Most of my patients do lift weights, which is very cool, but doesn't give us a lot of before and afters. I did find this study that looked at 13 weeks of combined sprint and resistance training, and it increased the basal serum testosterone. Unfortunately, they don't give us those numbers. They did create some graphs looking at the post-exercise, like the immediate post-exercise changes in these levels. And these don't seem to have a lot of significance other than the cortisol in some studies is shown to be a metric of the intensity of your training and then the subsequent anabolic response. Not that cortisol itself is anabolic, but that the cortisol means, hey, you had a really hard training session, you stressed your body, and now your body is going to recover from that and build back stronger. With the testosterone, we don't know exactly how much doing sprint training or a set of squats is going to boost the testosterone. But I do think that having some higher intensity training paired with some resistance training, compound movements, gives the body a stimulus to produce some testosterone. We know it improves numerous health metrics, and it's part of what you should be doing under your exercise checkbox of optimizing your testosterone naturally. We have another one here looking at older adults who were historically sedentary, and before their exercise intervention, they had slightly lower free testosterone, slightly lower DHT. After their exercise intervention, they saw some improvements, about 20% in the DHT and about 30% improvement in the free testosterone. The units in this study were labeled as picogram per ml. I'm fairly certain that's a typo and that these would actually be nanogram per ml readings. Otherwise, their DHT level would be lower than levels of those people taking dutasteride, for example. They truly had a 5 nanogram per deciliter dutasteride, which is what the conversion would be. So anytime we do a brief literature review, there's usually at least one typo or mistake or something like that we find. Maybe something was miscited. So maybe we can keep a counter of those officially for what we've uncovered on the Gillette Health podcast. It's not intentional fraud, but perhaps just sloppy peer review, something like that. So like a little notification bell in there for our sloppy peer review counter. In any case, exercising, in this case, weightlifting after being sedentary, you're going to have improvements in testosterone as a general rule. Some people, they're going to be very marked. Some people, you really may not see much of a change. And then finally, the section that everyone is interested in, supplements. And I only want to talk about one supplement for this particular podcast, probably the most well-studied. I think if we're going to do top to bottom and go over 10 supplements or 15 supplements that claim to increase testosterone, it's best suited for another podcast. But for something that semi-reliably will increase testosterone, Tongkat Ali, and specifically at a 1% standardized extract where you know sort of the uricomenone content, some of those things is going to be consistent, you could generally expect to see some improvement in testosterone. So The credit to this slide goes to Xama.com. They put together sort of four studies with the before and after testosterone levels here. You know, those range anywhere from about a 10% improvement up to a 40-something percent improvement. You do see, you know, a larger relative improvement at the lower levels, you could argue. But in reality, what I see in clinical practice is, you know, about a third of people, they're just not a good responder to Tonketali. The enzymes that it upregulates are not the rate-limiting step, not the thing that's limiting their testosterone production. And about a third of people get a modest response, something like this, where maybe they see a 20 or 30% improvement. And then maybe there's, it's probably less than a third of people, maybe, you know, one in five or one in six. But that third group will see a pretty robust response to Tonketali with their testosterone. They may see their testosterone go from 300 to 600 nanogram per deciliter. And I can't explain why you see sort of that spectrum of activity, but it's something that has been fairly well studied, seems to have a good safety profile. Not saying there couldn't be adverse effects from that. If there are, they likely do come from increases in testosterone. And one other cool fact about Tonketali is that it seems to be a phytoandrogen. So people read about phytoandrogens, phytoestrogens, xenoestrogens. These are compounds in like cosmetics or in our food supply that seem to act like or interact with androgen or estrogen receptors in our body. And people are generally afraid of these when it comes to things like soy. Like soy isoflavones are going to interact with the estrogen receptor. Well, Tonketali is going to interact with the androgen receptor, it seems, and also potentially upregulate your own androgen production, DHEA, testosterone. So that's sort of a cool fact and something that's unique to Tonketali. I think that's a pretty good summary of what to do with testosterone optimization if you are thinking to yourself, hey, I don't have an underlying cause. You know, my blood work looks good. I don't have a pituitary tumor. I don't have a varicocele. I don't have, you know, an obvious low testosterone, like 100 nanogram per deciliter that really needs a medical workup. But say your testosterone is 500, which is totally fine for a lot of people. A lot of people are going to feel very good there. But the question is, would I potentially feel better if my testosterone was a little bit higher? And the answer is, we don't know for sure. Directionally, that would tend to be the case. Exercise recovery would tend to improve as testosterone goes up. So you can go down each of these interventions, make sure that you're getting quality sleep, make sure your body composition is where it should be. We think as a rule of thumb for men, somewhere around 12 to 15% body fat is probably ideal. Maybe a little bit lower, a little bit higher for some men. Make sure you're getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep, having consistent sleep timing, sleeping in a dark room. Those are all great things for your sleep hygiene. Looking at your diet, how much dietary fat you're taking in. Looking at your exercise, making sure you're doing some aerobic training, some resistance training, and not overtraining, especially in those endurance sports. And then you've also got things under the supplement umbrella. We just briefly touched on Tonketali, probably has the most data out there. And we'll dive into more supplements, perhaps in the next installment, perhaps in a totally separate episode. So that does it for today. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. And may God bless you with health and happiness.